Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Debs, and I'm an alcoholic. Could everyone please turn off their mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try to keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In support of AA's singleness of purpose, we would respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics, and when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard AA can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at public level. The format of tonight's speaking meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a 4th speaker until approximately 8:30. The remainder of the meeting will then be open to the floor and close at 9 o'clock. Can we please have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Andy and I'm an alcoholic.
Andy.
Such beautiful faces out there as well. I'm here to do a job. You know, I was 15 years ago next Wednesday, I came in and I was finally defeated. I finally surrendered to the fact that I couldn't do life at all, that I was going to drink myself to an early grave that I almost had. So I was kind of ready to listen to what somebody else had to offer. I'd been in and out of institutions, prisons, for the best part of my adult life, and I'd reached a place where I truly believed nothing was going to work for me. And yet I came across a lad that I drank with consistently for a long time, and he had changed, you know, and it's Mike. He brought me to this meeting, and you know, for that I thank God for that. And and Wayne very graciously took me through the steps, and I recovered really, really quickly, you know, from this hopeless state of mind and body. You know, I'm not here to tell jokes, because I'm just not good at it. I'm not here to speak softly, because I like to be heard. You know, I mean, I've got a message to carry that I believe if you're a newcomer, hold on to your socks. You know, there's, in this room, I came in, like I say, 15 years ago, and the people that were here when I came around, they're still here. So if you're a newcomer, get inspiration from that. This works. You know, there aren't any flukes. You know, these people recovered in exactly the same way as I was shown. And I remember reading that, before Dr. Bob died, him and Bill Wilson were having, you know, one of their final conversations, and Dr. Bob said, "Bill, we've come so far. Let's not louse this up. Let's keep it simple." And that's where my inspiration lies today, is keeping things dead simple. I'm not here to reinvent the wheel. You know, I'm not here to tell you that I can do something differently, because I'm not. I'm one of these, it talks about in the basic text, as a defiant brat. You know, and I came in, and I'd been a defiant brat all my life. You know, I was one of these that would always go against authority, you know, and I'd love to do that as well. And, you know, I'd get you in trouble if I could. And my poor brother, you know, he's still to this day smarts a little bit from the amount of trouble that I got him in as a kid. But, you know, I always had this, Steve just said it, this, you know, this fear as a child growing up, that I needed you to accept me and I needed you to like me. If you didn't, I felt terrible about myself. I lived off of your emotions, you know, that type of thing. I was everywhere as a child, but mainly I was driven by fear. I put a drink inside me and it was happy days for Andy. You know, I could cope with all that. I became a very violent man. You know, I had a drink, I became a violent man. I wasn't going to show you any fear. And then it came to that point, that absolute desperation, like it talks about in the text, you know, that loneliness like few people ever experience. I had lost everything yet again, you know, to this illness. And it wasn't until I came in here that I understood it was an illness, this threefold illness that we suffer from. And, you know, I knew I was obsessed because I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, drink half a bottle of cider and sherry mixed so that I'd sleep till 9 before I could get in the pub and wake the landlord up. That's the type of alcoholic I was. And this, you know, this craving, once I put one inside my body, I could not tell you whether or not I was going to be able to have a couple of drinks or whether I was going to wake up in a dark and dingy place yet again or in somebody else's bed. I didn't know what was going to happen with me. I couldn't control any of that. But the thing that sold me on this program was this spiritual malady that it talks about, this irritable, restless, and discontent. Because even as a child, as Steve said, you know, I was always irritable. You irritated me. I was always restless within myself. I'd want you around my home, you know, invite my mates around. As soon as they came around, I want them gone, you know. And I was never contented with anything. Me and my brother, I remember one year we weren't a rich family. My mother was, we were quite poor. And for Christmas, my mum bought us both a bike. Now, mine was a brand new bike and it cost £30. £40. And my brother got a bike that was £30, but it was better than mine. It was a racing bike. So I took his bike out and I wrapped it around the line post and I broke his bike. But I was always discontented. I always wanted what you had. And then once I've had what you had, I'd want what you had, you know, and that's the way I was all the way through my life. Took a drink and it was like a solution to my whole life's problems. It was, you know, I suddenly felt like I had arrived until it got to the point where I had no control over it, you know. And when I came in here, you guys told me about this illness. And like I say, that third part of it, that's what hit me. And I thought, yeah, that's where I've been all my life. But the good news was, if you're a newcomer, the good news is there's a solution. And it's a solution to our whole life's problems. Life is life. I'm guaranteed to have ups and downs. Guaranteed, that's life. I'm human. However, this program always remains simple. And there has never been one time that I've applied the principles of this program in my life that I haven't got through it. You know, I've had in the last 2 years, I've had pretty much 8 people die in my family, you know, friends and family die. But not once did I think, poor old Andy, I better have myself a drink. All the thoughts that concerned me were, how can I help the families? You know, and that's what I did. This is what this program's done for me. It stopped me from being this self-centered mug that I was, you know. But I'm going to say it, I've had the best time in my whole life in recovery. I've laughed, I've joked, you know, I've got married in recovery, I've got grandchildren in recovery, my daughter's just told me yesterday that she's pregnant and I'm going to be a granddad again. These are amazing things, you know. I was your chronic alcoholic, I was sleeping under bushes, I was drinking surgical spirits, that was me, that was 15 years ago. I have an amazing life. I used to go around to meetings and really, really wind them up, because I'd say, if you've been where I am, been where I was, and you are where I am today, how dare I whinge? And I'd get all these barrage of people saying, you calling us whingers? You know, no, I didn't mean it that way. I can't have a bad day in recovery. Like I said, there's been deaths in the family and everything. I can't have a bad day in recovery. I am not sleeping under a bush. I don't have 3 months to live. You know, I don't have these things. I'm not mugging people. I'm not beating people up. I'm not abusing anybody, you know? So if I'm not doing that, I'm pretty much having a great day. Brilliant days are when I get the opportunity to help a newcomer, you know? And if you are a newcomer, this is what it is. Keep it simple. Don't be afraid to get up and ask for help, because that was the first part of my journey, was to get up and ask somebody to help me, because I had no clue anymore, you know? And And in doing so, like I say, I thank God for Wayne as well. He took me through this program and he showed me the way. The man kept it simple for me because I'm stupid, but I'm not a fool. You know, I've done many, many idiotic things. But I suddenly realized when he was telling me that I could recover the same way as all of you guys, I took it on board and, you know, I followed it. And all I did is I followed it. I was probably going to try to prove him wrong. I was going to do everything he asked me to do and then show him that it didn't work. But it did. And it's carried on working now for, like I say, 15 years. So if you are new and or you're struggling, get excited. Ask somebody with experience. Ask somebody that's gone before. Ask somebody that knows the way. Ask somebody that can show you how to work this 12-step program in your life. And start getting on and enjoying life. Because that's what it's about, guys. I wouldn't be here if I was miserable. It's all about the joy of recovery. And I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thank you to our first three speakers. I'd now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Mark.
Well, I'm Mark and I'm now Pollitt. I'm very grateful to be stood up here tonight. My head is a bit like a void at the moment. Right. Yeah, on May the 7th, 1998, I was going to any lengths to get absolutely smashed out of my brain, as normal. And I had this vodka fuel plan about 10 o'clock in the morning on May the 7th, like I say. And because I sat there and I'm thinking, God, I've spent the rent check again, and that's the third one, and if I don't do something, I'm going to get kicked out of my flat, and then I'm going to be on the street, and then I'm going to be, that's going to be it. That's a cliff. I'm just going to fall right off. And I was really scared. I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Anyway, so I started drinking this vodka, bought the newspaper, looked in the paper, and made up this plan that I was just going to get on a boat and I'm going to disappear. I'm going to get sober on the boat. And when I come back, I'll have lots of money, I'll pay my rent, and I'll be out of the crap. And brilliant, brilliant plan. So left my flat, got on the bus into town, went down the quay. I looked out to sea and I could see this little dot, and I thought, oh yeah, I know what boat that is. I thought, right, I estimate that's going to take about 3 hours to get in. So I went to the pub just at the end of the quay. And so I was in there and I was drinking treble vodkas and Coke, and I timed it brilliantly. I walked out of there, I walked up to the end of the quay, and there was this boat. And I got on the boat, and I had a word with the skipper, and I can remember what I said to him. I said, Terry, I'm right in the shit, just give me a job, I've got to get out of here, and I'll be all right once I'm out there. I'll be all right once I'm at sea. I'll work hard and all that. And he just said, Mark, he says, I can't take you. You're too ill. And, I was like gobsmacked, because the amount of times that I had gone down to that boat in a taxi and fell out of the taxi and then sneaked on the boat and gone to sleep. And he only knew I was there when we were like 30 miles out. And he said, I can't take you, you're too ill. And obviously, I thought, well, what am I going to do? And so, but luckily, my mate Pete said, Mark, here's some money. He says, go down the pub. I'll have a word with him. So off I went, back down the pub, back on the treble vodkas again. Hour and a half later, my mate Pete and Terry walk in the pub, and I saw him come in. I thought he's talked him round. I got up to shake his hand. I just passed out on the floor. And that was it. That was my brilliant plan, and it availed me nothing, basically. But obviously, you know, the good intentions were there. But good intentions availed me nothing either. And I can remember my old man saying that to me when I was a kid. And it just went right over my head. And so anyway, the next day was May the 8th, 1998. My old man rung me up and said, Mark, here's a number for Alcoholics Anonymous. Ring it. Christ. What have I done? And then you know, I started thinking about the night before, and it all started coming back as usual, and it's like, oh my God, not again, not again, not again. You know, and I'm walking around my flat and I'm headbutting the walls, I'm punching myself, kicking things. And anyway, I rang a number, and that was when my life was about to change, although I didn't even know it. 45 minutes later, I'm sat in my flat, and there was a knock at my door, and there was a Scottish ex-gangster, a London business computer freak, and this other guy, and they come in my flat, and they're looking around, and they're saying, "Oh, you haven't done very well on your own, have you? Make us a cup of tea." And honestly, I said to him, "Oh, you guys from Alcoholics Anonymous, and you want a cup of tea?" And they said, "Well, yeah." I said, "Make it yourself." And they went out and they looked in my fridge. There was nothing. They looked in my cupboards. There was nothing. And they had to go and get their own milk, sugar, tea, and come back and make the actual cup of tea. But they were sat there looking at me, and they're saying, you know, have you got a problem with alcohol? I mean, Christ! I mean, I thought, well, I thought to myself, I'm an alcoholic, but I knew that. I'd known that for a long time, but I didn't know anything about alcoholism, and that is the difference. You know what I mean? To me, alcohol was my anesthetic. You know, like Chris was saying, he didn't like anybody, and I didn't like anybody much, really, because everything about them that I hated was me. You know, it was me. You know, I hated myself. And anyway, cut a long story short. They sat there and basically they took me to a meeting, and you know, if there's any newcomers here tonight, I mean, I was sat in this meeting, and I was looking around, and I mean, I was shaking and sweating, and I was, you know, I was in a very bad way. I mean, like, everything was annoying. I mean, I was restless, irritable, discontent, you know, and everything was annoying. I'm looking around the room, and I thought, well, I'm 32, I'm sat in an AA meeting, I'm surrounded by a bunch of losers. Game over. And you know, that's what I thought. But towards the end of the meeting, this other thought came into my head, and I was looking around, and I didn't really hear a lot about what, you know, I heard a lot of people talking and that. But I mean, I sort of resigned myself, And I had this other thought came into my head, it's over. And it has. It has been, thank God, you know, a day at a time. But, you know, so I left there and I went for coffee and, down the Theatre Royal. I mean, I looked at the right state. I went to the Theatre Royal, shaking and sweating and wanting to throw up. But this guy gave me a list of suggestions to do, and he said, "I want you to do this." He said, "You haven't had a drink today, technically, since 5 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, thank what you think might be out there for a sober day." And he said, and you can start writing a gratitude list. You can write you've got somewhere to live. You can write that on there. You can write that you've been to an AA meeting. But when I did get back that night, and I got in my flat and I got on my knees and I did pray and I truly meant it. I truly meant it. I thought, well. Because these guys, they definitely had something about them. I mean, like this one guy in particular, he just said, there's a way out of this, you know. Just do what we've done. And, like I say, it just seemed like he was absolutely certain with what he was saying. You know, he just said, do what we've done. I asked him, I asked this guy to be my sponsor, probably about a week later, but the thing was that in the meantime, I was ringing him up, so he was basically my temporary sponsor, and I went to a meeting every night. And I asked this guy to sponsor me, and basically he just said that, you know, he said, well, you know, can you follow suggestions? And I thought, yeah, I can. You know, and I decided I would just do what he said, and he took me through the 12 steps, and I mean, and then I started, you know, basically I started to realise what an alcoholic was, you know, I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I'm one of these that's a distinct entity, you know. Once I take a drink, then I set off a phenomenon of craving. But basically, I can't safely use alcohol. You know, I mean, once I start drinking, that's it. I'm just drinking till I'm comatose. But I was I'd gone way past the point of like trying to control my drinking. That was like miles back in the dust. You know, like it was just. I just wanted more alcohol all the time, and I'd lost so many jobs. I mean, and you know, I could understand the phenomenon of craving, because I'd had some corkers, some absolute corkers of these cravings. I mean, one time I walked into the office with my telly on my shoulder, and just said to the bloke, "Look, just hang on to the telly, give me a couple of bottles of cider, and I'll be back for it tomorrow." And he just get out. and then I thought, well, how bloody reasonable is that? I mean, I'm obviously going to be back for my telly, you know. And I thought, well, I'll go down the pub with it. So I walked down the pub with this massive telly on my shoulder. Put it on the bar, said to the landlady, look, just give me a few drinks till tomorrow, keep the telly behind the bar, and then, you know, and then I'll come down tomorrow, I'll give you the money. And she just said, you're barred. And that was it. But how unreasonable, you know, and that was my thinking, you know. I thought, well, surely, I mean, they don't think I'm just going to leave my telly there. And that is a craving, and you know, I mean, there's hundreds like that. I mean, there was one time I was working in this upholstery place, and I turned up there, 11 o'clock in a taxi. I was supposed to have been there at 7, and I was drunk, and I walked in, and I come up with this this crap excuse about what some major disaster had happened, and I couldn't get there, and this guy said, he said, Mark, he said, you know, I think you should go home. And I said, oh, thanks very much. I said, I could do with a day off. He said, go home and stay home. And that was, and you know, that was another job gone. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's right, I can go to the pub. And I went home, I thought, I don't care a shit about the job. And I didn't, you know, until I ran out of money. And then it was like, oh, God, I've got to get another job. And that is it. You know, that's what I'm trying to say. My best ideas, my best thinking was never going to get me anywhere. You know, I was suffering from this illness. I didn't even know I had. And it was a hopeless condition. And it was progressive. And that was what these guys were saying to me. You know, they were talking to me about the progressive nature of alcoholism. And I could, you know, I could understand that. I could identify with that because it just went back. And I remember, like, when I was, like, 13 and I was drinking homemade homebrew. And, you know, and after a while, I mean, I did come to rely on it. And I didn't even realise, to be honest. But my drinking got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And it was my anaesthetic. I mean, I didn't want to, you know, I hated the days when I had no money and I couldn't get any money from anywhere. And I did everything, you know. I mean, I begged. Well, I didn't beg so much, but I definitely stole. And, you know, I would do anything to get money. And I did come to that point where, you know, I had been defeated for a long, long time by alcoholism, but I just didn't know it. And I honestly never thought there would be a way out. But, you know, there was something in the back of my mind that was saying, you know, like, it'll all be all right one day, Marty. It'll all be all right one day. Something will happen. And when I, you know, like I say, when I came along to AA, I mean, these guys, basically, they convinced me, and I just thank God that I just looked at this bloke, and like someone was saying earlier about inspiration, I mean, these guys, they inspired me. I mean, it was just a simple, it was just their deportment, really. It's just like the way they were there, and they were telling me about their drinking and the things they'd done, and a few stories like I've just told you then, but I mean, and I thought, yeah, they're like me. And the way they fought and the way they looked at everything and, you know, the way they just hated authority and they wouldn't do what they were told and they were always trying to find a way around things. They was on the outside of society and, you know, and then they couldn't all, you know, they couldn't wait to get home and just get pissed. And you know, that was, you know, that was me. And these guys convinced me, but the way out was just a program of action. And that was, you know, that was the beauty of it. I mean, they sold it to me because I didn't really have to understand anything at all. All I had to do was just trust this bloke, which I did. I did trust him. And he said, right, Mark, these are the daily suggestions. I want you to do them every day and I want you to ring me at 6 in the evening before you go to a meeting or, you know, 5:30 or whatever. And I started reading the big book, and I remember the doctor's opinion. I mean, the doctor's opinion, basically, I remember the first time I read it, and I just thought the light started to come on then. You know, I thought, you know, I am, you know, I'm definitely one of these people. But I started to believe there was a solution, you know, like Bill, I read Bill's story and I remember reading that and I'm thinking, Christ, when's this guy going to stop drinking? You know, look at the devastation in his life and when's he going to stop? And, you know, I was one day sober. But, you know, I hadn't really up until that point ever thought of a life without alcohol. You know, my alcoholic life was the only normal one. You know, I was locked in and, But when they talked to me about a solution, my ears pricked up, you know, and I thought, Christ, yeah, I mean, that'd be amazing to, and the thing was, like somebody else said, once I started to follow his suggestions, I did get the feeling, you know, that this obsession had gone. Because, you know, I remember actually like 2 or 3 days sober, and I had some money, and I thought to myself then, well, I could just go down the offy and get some booze. And then I thought, but I don't have to. And to me, I mean, that's just like staggering, you know, that I normally there wouldn't be no dilemma. There's a, you know, no thought, you know. And, but I thought, well, no, I'll just carry on doing this AA stuff. I'll just carry on doing this. And I absolutely loved it. I mean, it was just like waking up from a nightmare. You know, I really, you know, I'd been in this horrible, self-centered, dishonest life. And, you know, I mean, like, I was talking to Chris the other day. I mean, like, when he was saying about he was going to this school to talk to these kids, and I thought, blimey, I remember, you know, when I was at primary school, and at the end of the day, you used to stand there, you put your chair on the table, and then you used to stand there and say your prayers, and then they used to let you go home. And I remember one time I actually stood there, and I always used to like to say my prayers, but this time I wouldn't, and I got in a right load of shit over it. And then I thought to myself, what made me that day not want to say my prayers? Resentment. That's what it was. And from then on, you know, from then on, things went down the pan. And so, ignorance is no defense, you know, definitely not, where alcoholism is concerned. You can't just say to yourself one day, Christ, I'm glad I found out about all that, because now I know I'm not ignorant anymore, and I'm probably not alcoholic. You know, I'm one of these people that, you know, like I know, you know, I mean, I knew from day one that I was alcoholic. I just needed someone to identify with, you know, and basically once I did that, and then they were telling me that the solution, I just went along with it. And I kept it very, very simple. Like I say, you know, I went through the 12 steps with my sponsor, and you know, coming back to resentment, you know, like I was one of these people that thought, what are resentments? What are they? You know, and I remember saying to my sponsor, I thought, well, oh, this will be quite easy, I said, because I haven't got any resentments. But then the sort of like a week or so later, I'm going crazy with resentment, absolutely crazy. But I'm writing them down. I'm writing them down, and when it dawned on me what a massive mountain it was, and I was thinking, like, you know, this inventory, how massive it is. And I thought, well, I just can't do it. I can't do it. But I was doing it. This guy said to me, he said, look, he said, I said to him, it's like looking up at a mountain. He said, well, yeah, he said, write it down, he says, and then do your fifth step, he says, and then you just step over the mountain. And I thought, I'll give it a go. But that's actually what it felt like, to be honest. You know, because just back onto a level playing field. I've never looked back from then, you know, but I'm one of these people that, you know, like, obviously you get resentments, but I always say to myself, well, whose head's it in? Well, it's in mine. Right then. You know, so that's that. I can do something about that. I can write it down. You know, forget about the rights and wrongs of everything, because, I mean, Christ, if I sit there and think about the rights and wrongs of everything, you know, that's not going to get me anywhere. The resentment is in my mind, you know. So I, you know, and I remember actually writing my step four, and my sponsor actually came over. He said he's going to look at it, and he's just going to say, you know, just check it, you know, before I do my fifth step. And he came over three times, and he looked at it. And the first time he said, just look for the dishonesty in the third column. And I thought, all right, you know, obviously I don't know anything, so, you know. And I'm looking at it, I wrote a load more resentments down, still looking at it. Anyway, the third time he came over, he said, you still haven't quite got the hang of this dishonesty. Christ, what does he mean? But anyway, he went away, and I started thinking about, you know, like this power greater than myself, this God, you know, of my understanding. And I sat there and I'm thinking, I'm writing all these resentments, and I thought to myself, now, would this God want me to be resentful? No. Right, therefore, they're all dishonest. Every single one. And I've always remembered that as a valuable lesson to me. You know, like, I've carried on being sponsored, and I've done service in the group, and I've stuck to my home group, and I've been able to take my own inventory, and I'm still as grateful today as the day I first came to my first meeting. Well, obviously a hell of a lot more grateful than the first day, but but actually going through the steps is, you know, if there's any newcomers here, you know, alcoholism is a, you know, deadly illness, and don't take any prisoners. Do what we've done. I'll leave it there. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.